After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Hey everyone, Raghu back with Mind Rolling, and I got a fun little kind of party going on today because we have Mike Posner, and many of you, of course, know who Mike is and had some great hits in the last number of years that entertained. It sounds like the first hit, was it in the summer?
Yeah, I think the first book is in the summer.
Yeah, that's what I got. That's the perfect thing. Yeah, that's what I remember too when I was looking for music way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And Rachel Fisher is joining, and Rachel is development director for Ramdas. Many people you're going to know Rachel too because she is behind all of the offerings that happen from ramdas.org. And much more than that. And so happy to have you here too, Rachel.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm actually the creative director now. I don't know if you got the memo, but.
No,
I didn't. Upgrade.
Pay tax. I upgraded myself.
Okay. It's perfect. Perfect. So Mike and I were supposed to meet, as we just said before we got on, you know, over 3 years ago, around the time that he was doing the cross-country trip, walking trip, which had a lot of different adventures there. And for one reason or another, the pandemic happened. That's what happened, right?
Yeah.
And so we got a little distracted. But fortunately, we were able to get back together. And Mike is going to be doing one of our Soulland music evenings.
That's right.
And that's, what is the date? I think it's the 20
next Friday.
Second, yes, 22nd of April. This podcast will go up before then, so everybody can be apprised. And so really, thank you for joining us for that series. And the people, you'll be able to do Q&A with Mike and so on, aside from a musical presentation.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. You know, I was listening to Ramdas Here and Now, the podcast. I, you know, before we connected, you know, I'd been listening to every episode of that podcast. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Raghu does the intros and sometimes more than an intro, right?
Yeah, that's where people get pissed too. What's going on like that? We can just listen to it. I said, well, fast forward it. Leave me alone.
It's because you recall everything that's in the podcast before it actually happens.
Yes.
Neither here nor there.
I like redundancy. You know, this stuff is deep. You know, it takes a lot to penetrate into consciousness.
Oh, anyways, I just had this like very strange moment because, you know, I've fallen asleep to your voice or Ramdas' voice so many times.
That's so weird.
You know, I was listening to one of the, and not just, you know, I listen to it whenever, but, I was listening to one of the newer episodes, and you're teasing about the performance that I'm doing, and I'm like falling asleep, and I hear you say my name. I was like, wait,
what?
I'm on
funny.
Here now. What's going on?
You're going to start having a Pavlovian moment during this podcast where you just start falling asleep.
Don't do that right in front of me. It's too much to take. No,
I've gotten so, you know, one of the things I've told Raghu, you know, just in our personal discussions is what a gift that podcast was. And thank you, you know, again to you for putting that together. And I'm sure it's a lot of hard work to go through all those tapes, and now some of them weren't even, you know, none of them were digitized, right? Like in the vault. Yeah. You know, yeah.
We have the greatest curator that any library could possibly have, and we should call it out. Nathan Wilburn does an extraordinary job for us in finding, because there's all sorts of ways in which this stuff gets disseminated in different forms and different themes and different people involved, teachers. And so, yeah, he does a great job. And he has worked with me. Also, he's been around a long time. We have some people who have been, this thing is getting old, sort of. It's weird.
It's getting old, but also like it keeps renewing, right?
Yeah, I mean the age of, like, we're actually still doing this. Now it's, 15 years later almost, something like that. It's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing. And back to you. The one thing I always, yes, you. The one thing I always want to know is, what are the things that happened to you when you were a kid that, you know, going through teenagerhood and so on, that where consciousness became even a realization of possibility, or at least being out of what you can feel is a bit of a box that you've been placed in. We are all placed in by virtue of the culture and the parents and the previous neurotic tendencies that you bring in.
Great.
What happened?
Yeah, well, for me, it was actually much later. Nothing really happened when I was a teenager.
That's because you didn't see John Coltrane. That's what happened to me. Okay. If you had seen John, it would have changed then. That's what happened.
I was on a date last night, and my date put on some Train, and it was...
Oh, you're kidding.
Really good.
Okay. Then she's right.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. But anyways, yeah, I really did not have much of a spiritual component to my life whatsoever. Mm. I was raised in sort of a secular, humanistic, Jewish household. So we would go to like Sunday school, but we learned, you know, strictly music, history, language. And that was it. Never mention of God or anything spiritual. It was explicitly secular. Mm. And I just, yeah, I lived life from that place. You know, if I could see it, touch it, I believed it. And that was kind of it. And my journey came from a path kind of in the back door, a way that one might not expect. So when I was... just finishing high school, I met a rapper in Detroit. I'm from Detroit. And I met a rapper named Sean. And Sean was like kind of a big deal. He was already speaking to Kanye West at the time. And for us, that was like, whoa, you know, Kanye West. Yeah. You know? And so he was very kind, and he sort of like inducted me into his group of friends. And I would produce music for him. And long story short, his career like sort of stagnated, and my career took off. And this is like, you know, 4 or 5 years into our friendship later. Mm. And he was, his career like really was on the outs. He had gotten a record deal, but he was just about to get dropped from the label. Nothing, just like, it wasn't happening. And then all of a sudden, his career took like a 180, and he got this hit song out of nowhere, and he started experiencing all of this like material success. Mm. Okay. So that was like, whoa, that was kind of cool. You did that. You turned it around. But beyond the material success, I went and saw him this time. Now we were both lived in LA at this time. So I went to the studio, and he was just kind of glowing. And I know you guys, everyone on this call has had that experience where you're around somebody and they just make you feel good. They kind of light you up just by being around them. And even I went home from the studio that night, and I was still kind of like a little bit high. you know? Mm. And years later, I met Ram Dass and experienced like this feeling times a million, you know? But I felt something. So I went back to studio the next day. And I said, Sean, you know, what the hell are you doing? Like clearly something's working for you. You turned your career around, but like you're glowing. And he said, you got to read these two books. And the first was Asking It Is Given by Esther and Jerry Hicks. Mm. And the other was The Alchemist. I read The Alchemist first. Mm. And it sort of just cracked me open, Raghu. It sort of just cracked me open. And I thought, well, it seems to like be really working for him. So I was kind of reading with an open mind and open heart. And that there began my sort of like introduction to the spiritual, to consciousness. And from there, I was just kind of go on YouTube, rabbit holes. And I started listening to Wayne Dyer lectures. And then it got onto Ram Dass lectures and of course got Be Here Now. And that book did to me what it does, you know, to people when they read it. And
amazing.
It just changed my life, you know, it changed my life from the inside out. And then, you know, fast forward to when I got to meet Ram Dass, I had been sort of like, dilettanting my way through like all these practices. And, you know, I had started doing TM and meditating and still it was like I was checking it all out, even though I was doing it, you know. And a friend of mine, one of my best friends, his name is Milo. And Milo's mother was dying. And she had some sort of, I don't know how, but she was connected with Ram Dass. And they would speak on like FaceTime or like how we're speaking now while she was in the hospital. And they sort of had this trip on the books, Milo and his mother, where they were going to go to Maui and visit him. Unfortunately, she passed away. She made her transition before that trip ever happened. Mm-hmm. And Milo calls me up and he goes, look, I'm going on this trip still. And he goes, I want you to come with me. I said, are you sure, man? That's, you know, that's quite an honor. He said, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we go to Maui. We made a little vacation out of it. You know, we're swimming in the beaches and, you know, I don't know. We went there maybe 4 or 5 days and, you know, our Ram Dass day was like the last day. So we're getting ready. And we went to the house and they let us in and they said, they'll be down shortly. And he came in the room and mostly Raghu, he said a bunch of things I'd heard him say before. Right. Cause I had read the book and knew the stories and he said one new thing, which caught me, but mostly it wasn't his words. I'll say what he said that caught me. And that was, he said, you know, all day you're going around and you're categorizing and deciding what to love and what not to, what's good and what's bad, what's acceptable, what's unacceptable. He goes, that takes a lot of energy. He goes, much easier to just love everything. Mm. Oh, wow. You know, and then he showed us, of course, the carpet on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
And segued into that story. But more than that soundbite or any of the stuff he said, and we were there probably 40 minutes. And then he looked at us and he said, okay, time for you guys to go. And we said, you know, and I went and I kissed him on the forehead and we walked out of the house. And when we walked out, I remember, I mean, this sounds like kind of strange to say back, but this is what happened. I walked out of the house and I like keeled over.
What?
I like keeled over almost like not like collapsed, but like I felt overcome with like emotion and connection. That was the feeling. I looked around. We were outside now. We're just walking back to the car. And I felt as if I was just in love with everything. I mean, like everything from the door handle on the car door to the rusty gate to like the dog shit to like everything. Like I just felt connected like all the way.
Sounds like MDMA to me, but
yeah, but it was just a hit a RD, RDMA.
RDMA.
So, and
that's cool.
This is, you know, that experience was what it was and it ended, right? You know, the next day I woke up and felt pretty much normal. Mm-hmm. But this is the way it was a pivotal moment in my life was I thought him, this is a guy that did the work. You know, he's been working on himself, he's doing the meditation and all this stuff. And I could feel it. And no longer was I like poking around and see. Now I knew this stuff is real. Mm. You know? He just by him being himself and cleaning up his himself, he was able to give me that. Mm. And I thought, you know, I would like to make people feel like that, you know, when they're around me. And then I start thinking about it and I go, I can't really think of something more important to do. Mm. And so that was a turning point in my life where that, you know, the sadhana really became a real thing. Wow. And for me, and that was like, you know, that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm up to. And but, yeah.
Yeah. No, just to say, you're lucky you came into this life with the gift that you have, that voice and the ability to emote naturally. That is doing to a lot of people. So you are already doing the thing. And of course, you know that. Other thing is, this story, which I didn't hear. Did you know this story, Rachel?
I feel like I think it might have been told on the Solient, or it might be told tomorrow.
That's right.
I've heard
okay,
it.
Good catch. Good catch. Yeah, maybe. Anyhow, but what I can't tell you how many times that I talk about trust, like trusting ourselves. And this is what happened to you. You just completely connected by virtue of Ram Dass's radiation of that, I call it that thing there. That's what we call it in Quebec, where I'm from, which it's ineffable. Everybody has this experience at one time or another. Most people dismiss it as bullshit. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's a little too powerful, especially if it's another human that is emitting it. Not a dream, perhaps, which is easiest to dismiss, or reading something in the book, or hearing me, like hearing Coltrane that one time. So the fact that this happens and happened to you, this trust in the ineffable goes beyond your head. And you say to me, yeah, this turned me, and I knew this was all real at that point. Everything that I had been looking for and working with and people and reading and all of it, that's what I say to everybody. Everyone has that opportunity to trust that intuitive place that got, for you, it was overwhelming. You just like were bowled over by it.
Yeah.
But it can be much subtler than that. And, you know, we just need to trust that place. So yeah, beautiful story, man.
Absolutely. You know, there was also, just to add one more layer to it, there was not a feeling for me that day of like, I want to bow down and just worship Ram Dass forever. It was.
He would have loved that.
It felt like much more accessible, inspiring. Like it felt like he did something I can do. We all can do.
Yeah,
that's right. How it felt, and right. I really appreciated that. Yeah.
And he did. You know, he did the work, and of course, he had that stroke. Not many people could handle it that I've ever met the way that he handled that. I mean, handle, it's not even the right word. The grace was the perspective that he had to allow it all to be instead of fighting it. And then from there, he did the work that he was set out to do in this lifetime.
Yeah.
All right, Rachel, your turn.
My turn? Oh, as you were talking, I was just thinking about that. Who said that the next Buddha is the Sangha?
Oh, Thich Nhat Hanh.
Thich Nhat Hanh. The next Buddha is the Sangha. And I feel that so much since Ram Dass has passed that his his teachings and what he embodied have really sort of like dissipated into the community and have kind of become all of us. And I just really feel that rather than having like a figurehead, you know, whether he wanted to be or not, he was a figurehead. And now that he's passed, I feel like he's sort of everywhere now. And I really feel that like he is accessible to everyone, whether you're on the spiritual path or not. And I'm just really passionate about that.
Yeah. I mean, and you telling that story, Mike, you cannot deny it. Nobody sitting here either watching this or listening to it, in my mind, it'd be very difficult to deny it in any way by virtue of the power of the transmission that, and it isn't Ram Dass. That's the beauty of it. It is a gigantic, I mean, you brought it into our moment. Mm-hmm. We had that darshan. So it's the darshan that gets created, which is being in the presence of that which cannot be named.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Beautiful.
What about, now, when we talked about your walk across America, and it's a very famous story, and everybody who knows you has heard it a billion times probably.
Yeah, but I bet there's some people listening that don't know who the hell I am.
Yeah, right.
So we could talk.
Doesn't matter. I always like telling a story again and again because redundancy gets it to sink in. But you know what happened to me that reminded me of it? I went walking. I don't think I shared this with you, Rachel. I went walking in one of the canyons here. And a guy comes.
I thought you were going to say across the country. Yeah. I went walking for half a mile.
You know better than that. a guy coming from the other direction said, "How far are you going up?" I said, "You know, just past the school. There's a school up there, Horn Canyon." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, there's a big rattler up there on the path." And I said, "Okay, thanks." I was with my dog. So off we went. And sure enough, we found it. It was off to the side. I was really looking carefully when I walked along. Yeah. Maybe I was being a little too gratuitous. I don't know. But I actually, so I got there and there he was. And dog, we both like saw it immediately and didn't get too close. But then I took a step forward with my camera, iPhone. And it rattled at me and I got a beautiful little video of it, right? So then I stepped back and then I figured this might be a good opportunity to teach the dog something. So the rattler stopped rattling and then I let the dog go ahead just a step or two, just, you know, encroaching on the space. And the rattler started up again and then she jumped back. I went, whoa, and we both jumped back. Yeah. And I thought that was a good opportunity.
Yeah,
but then it immediately. Oh, I'm going to be talking to Mike. You got to tell me your story is all. I mean, a little different.
Yeah. So, just backtracking, you know.
Yeah, to the actual trip. Never mind the rattlesnake.
Yeah. Well, I'll loop back to it. Don't worry. But okay. You know, we mentioned a little bit at the beginning, and people listening probably have varying degrees of familiarity with me. But basically, in 2010. You know, I've been making music, you know, since I was 8 years old. In 2010, I don't know, maybe I was 23 or something like that. And one of my songs like exploded. And it's a big giant hit song. Mm. And so I, at a very young age, like attained a gross amount of popularity. Attention from the opposite sex, money, all these sorts of worldly things came to me at a very young age. And I had a very successful career, and I still have a very successful career in music. I've been nominated for a Grammy. In 2019, I felt sort of trapped underneath the weight of my own life. And I didn't... I'd wake up in the morning and there didn't seem to be a compelling reason to get up, you know? And many of us have been there, right? Mm-hmm. And also my father passed. Mm-hmm. And then some of my peers that were young artists like me passed away. Mm-hmm. Some of them from drugs, some of them from suicide. And all these compounding factors, I thought, you know, like just going on another tour and doing like the Mike Posner show feels like unbearable. So I call my friend Elliot. Elliot always is like exuding superhuman enthusiasm, right? And like he, I'm like, Elliot, like I just don't want to do this anymore. And he goes, okay, what do you want to do? I said, I want to walk across America, but like my manager, he thinks it's crazy. And Elliot goes, well, that's great news. I said, what do you mean? He goes, that your manager thinks it's crazy. That's great news. And I'm like really confused. I say, Elliot, what do you mean? And he says, you got to understand, not all crazy ideas are great, but all great ideas are crazy. And it just, something about what he said, like unlocked sort of like a truth underneath the words. And I felt sort of cascade through me. And I decided in that moment, like I'm going to walk across America this year. And so April 15th, 2019, I stood off the coast of Asbury Park, New Jersey with 2 feet in the ocean and with saltwater waves crashing over my back, I took a step. And step one is take one step. So I took a step and I knew the Pacific Ocean was like 2,800 some miles away. So I walked typically like 24 miles per day. I walked supported. So I had a friend with me and he had an RV. So the RV would go like way ahead of me and I'd walk all day and like catch up to it. And that meant I didn't have to carry like a giant pack. There are other people who walk across America like carrying bigger backpacks and stuff, and they're more badass than me. Anyways, so I walked and I put on social media that like anyone can join me. And people would come from like all over America to walk with me. And I'd always ask them two questions when they came. The first was, why did you come here? And sometimes they just wanted a picture, like they were a fan of my music and that was fine. And other times, like they were just had like, they were bored on the weekend and wanted to see if they could actually find me, like a scavenger hunt. But sometimes they came because like they had no one else to talk to. And they're like, their fathers had also just died, or they were high school seniors who didn't know what to do next. Or they were professionals who were also stuck under the weight of their own lives. Or they were soldiers who had seen killing and had killed other humans. And we each walked together, I guess, healing in our own ways. The second question I'd always ask is, if I pray for you, what should I pray for? And often this was like a one-word answer. You get back like love or happiness or success. But sometimes there's like, I remember this young man on the Hualapai Reservation in Arizona. His name was Rowan and he had a big red Ford F-350 and he pulls over to the side of the road and I'm like a little freaked out because it's a big truck, you know? And this like, you know, 21-year-old gets out. And I asked him, you know, if I pray for you, we talked for a while first, but then I said, you know, if I pray for you, what should I pray for? And he said, 5 years ago, my father died from alcohol. And 3 years ago, my only sibling, my big brother, died from alcohol. And he said, 3 months ago, my mom died from alcohol. You know, so if you pray for me, pray for my sobriety because I'm the only one left. And it's like, he reaches back into his truck and he pulls out a satchel, like a little leather satchel. And he puts in my hand. He goes, this is sweet grass. And sage, because this will keep you safe while you walk on our lands. And he drove away. his fist out the window like this. And so, you know, I walked across New Jersey, across Pennsylvania, walked across a little bit of West Virginia, saw a double rainbow in Ohio, walked across Indiana. By then, like, my feet were starting to hurt pretty damn bad. You know, it's, yeah, it hurts to walk across America. It's amazing. Yeah. I walked across, Indiana, Illinois, into Missouri during a heat wave. It's like really, really hot. It was also flooded. So there was days where I was like walking the wrong direction. Walked into Kansas, walked across Kansas, walked into Colorado, and I could just see the Rocky Mountains on the horizon. And it was quite a emotional moment, as you might imagine, knowing, like, you know, you started in the Atlantic Ocean, you could see the Rocky Mountains. And knowing you got there on foot. And I had walked 1,797 miles since that first step out of the ocean. And as I was, you know, taking another step, I just felt like, ow, like this pain shoot up my leg.
Oh.
And I didn't think like too much of it, but I knew something had bit me. And I thought, you know, what the heck was that? And then I heard a sound I didn't want to hear. And it was, you know, and that's when I realized, like, shit, you know, a poisonous rattlesnake is just, you know, like sunk its fangs in my left ankle here. Mm. So, luckily there were two guys there that had showed up to walk with me that day. And one of them, like, ran up the road to get a little bit of cell phone service. He called 911, got a connection. He brought the phone back. It was still on the line. And I got to talk to dispatch. Dispatch told me, you know, I've sent two ambulances from different directions and a chopper. And she said, whatever gets there first, get in. And I said, you know, am I going to die? Because by this point, like, just weird things started happening. It was like, you know, a psychedelic, but a weird one. Yeah. You know, right. And like, I felt like I was sort of fading in and out of consciousness. Yeah. And I said, am I going to die? And she said, you know, I don't know, sir.
Well, thanks a lot, lady.
Yeah. Well, at least it was the truth, you know. And actually, an ambulance showed up, you know, like an hour later. And I got in. And actually, in that moment, I thought, you know, hey, maybe this is like my last few hours alive. I wasn't in like a crazy pain. I was just kind of like out of it. And I thought, you know, if it is my last few hours alive, I ain't going to waste my last few hours alive worrying about if they're going to be my last few hours alive or not. I was just going to enjoy them. And actually, like, there was a tremendous amount of peace and presence that flowed in, and all the colors kind of seemed brighter. And I don't know, maybe it was the snake venom, but long story short, I was in the ICU, 3 days. My legs swelled to like the size of an elephant trunk. I went from walking 24 miles a day to like, I couldn't really even walk to the bathroom. I had like a walker and they'd help me. But thanks to like really good medical care and just like getting good sleep and all those kinds of things, eating healthy. Like 3 weeks after the bite, I just like healed. And this is actually the hardest part of the snake bite, was like, I'm better. And now I have a choice. I can either quit and stay home. And actually, probably no one will even think I'm a quitter because I have this amazing like reason to not walk anymore. I got bit by a rattlesnake. Or I can go back to basically like hell, you know, it is so hot, like the excruciating foot pain, like the shoulders of the roads, or you're almost getting hit by cars every day. It's like amazing, but it's hard. And I was just like, am I going to, you know, live my life according to like my reasons, aka excuses, or my commitment? And so I said, screw it. You know, I went back to the back to the spot that the snake bit me. I was pretty scared, but back then I was having like snake nightmares and stuff, you know. But I took another step, and I kept taking steps until I got to those mountains that were in the horizon. I walked up and over the Rocky Mountains. I started to like dream big dreams. I felt like almost invincible. You know, I started like see myself climbing Mount Everest when I was done walking, but I had to stay focused. I still had a long way to go. So I kept taking steps. I walked across Colorado into a little bit of New Mexico, walked across Navajo Nation, which was like life-changing in and of itself. Walked across Arizona, walked across Nevada, walked into California where people started to like prematurely congratulate me. They say, congrats. I'm like, for what? I still have 300 miles and a mountain range in the Mojave Desert, you know? And I walked through the Mojave Desert. I walked, kept taking steps over the San Bernardino Mountains, kept taking steps, walked into Los Angeles. I could see the Hollywood sign on my right, kept taking steps. Oh, man. And the pavement turned into sand. My walk escalated into a run. And after 6 months and 3 days, 2,851 miles, I dove into the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, Jesus.
And so that's the rattlesnake story right here.
Wow. Never mind the rattlesnake story.
It just seems that you have this constitution, and maybe this isn't a natural way of being for you, that is so... there's so much unbridled joy, and so much of your glass seems to be half full. And I wake up every single morning in basically an existential crisis. And I'm just wondering, like, I've been in this world for 10 years, like trying my hardest to like figure out how to wake up with some sense of like peace and okayness, and go a little bit more like from my head into my heart. And I haven't found that thing. And I just see like you exude this positivity, and I just want to know like what what are you drink? What are you sipping on? Like what? It, how to? Like what is that? Is it just who you are? Or have, like what is it?
First of all, thank you. Second of all, I think it's probably just like a misunderstanding. I am like no straight. Like I talked about at the beginning of the story. You know, it's like that's the reason I left was like. I was so uninspired, you know, and life comes at you, right? So like, I'm no stranger to that feeling that, you know, like that sort of gray malaise that can wash over life, or what we call it, like a low level of depression that's kind of just like there for a long time. I mean, I have a tremendous amount of sadness. I think it's part of why I make music. Because I don't always know how to like express it through my words. And so sometimes when I couple it with a melody and a chord, so all that to say, you know, definitely, I think I have moments where like I feel really positive and life is great. And I have a lot of moments where I feel the opposite, and often they're like in the same hour, you know? I'm not sipping on anything special, you know, and I think a lot of us who are on this path are on this path because we need it. Right. And I think I probably fit that description, you know, it's like, my meditation practice. And now, you know, I have like my ice bath practice and my exercise, you know, I do all those things. They make me feel good, but sometimes they just like make me feel not horrible, you know? So I don't know, man, I don't have the secret, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's why Ram Dass was such a great example of somebody who absolutely had to transform or was going to be living a pretty awful life, right? Half paralyzed in a chair. Only at one point did he really start to, he got around a little bit. There was one point when we first, he got out of the hospital in Maui, and then he started to do some real rehab at that time, and actually with a cane got around a little bit, and so, you know, that was the extent of it. And it was, you know, his whole thing was, he was a helper. And then it was how, you know, who can help me and at this point? And that was a tremendous, tremendous ego buster for him, you know. So he faced some really dark stuff and came out on the other side. And those of us that knew him from the earliest days, knew that he was pointing to who he became. It's a weird thing through this stroke. And nobody should have that kind of suffering. Nobody. I mean, we saw him in a lot of pain, especially towards the end, although he was in and out of hospitals throughout that 15-year period on Maui or whatever it was. So, yeah, we had a really good example of somebody who, I mean, he would bullshit me all the time. I get on the phone with him, you know, we were talking all the time. And I, how are you? Just wonderful, he'd say. I go, I know a bit of what's going on. That's a lot of bullshit. Will you tell me the truth? And then he'd start to tell me the truth. And then I'd go, okay, yeah, okay, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
But to have that kind of indefatigable life force, which was based on the fact that he cared, the number one thing for him was sharing.
Mm.
That's all. And if he had to deal with pain, he dealt with pain. If he had to deal with being ego busted, that he could no longer do the gift that he had been given in this life, the gift of gab, and that's gone.
Yeah.
You know, although he still came up like, you know, you were with him and he told some of the same things you had heard before. But then suddenly he said something that was completely out of that particular context. And he would do that all the time. And but for the most part, he was living that thing. So, yeah, that kind of it came from the indefatigability. What's that word?
I don't know. I was
that courage. Courage is a better word. Courage.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Out of that courage, it was there because he cared about other people. Not just, he wasn't just caring about how much pain he was in. That in fact, he couldn't walk anymore. He couldn't play cello. He couldn't golf. He couldn't drive a sports car. You know.
Yeah.
He cared. And that's a wonderful lesson for all of us.
And it's like, I'll be curious to know. It seems as if, you know, of course, I met him after the stroke, you know, and I had the experience I described earlier. Mm-hmm. But it seems like, you know, just some, I had a conversation with Sharon Salisbury. She seems like, and forgive me if like you already covered this in what you just said, but it seems like the stroke took him even way further in his, on his sadhana and his spiritual path than he was before that. Is that fair to say? Was there a big change? Like, cause you knew him before and after.
Yeah. I would say more that it just became who he was, became uncovered, who that essence of who he is, there isn't a was in all of this. And I think that happened as a result of just the stroke just peeled off some of the layers of identity that he used to talk about all the time, right? And he was dealing with all that stuff. And it peeled that off. So, I mean, and not, it wasn't a smooth, it was like,
yeah.
Ooh, ow. You know,
ripping off.
The ripping, yeah. Yeah. So, but I don't think he went anywhere. The first moment that I saw him, when I first met him, way back when, that presence, I mean, I tell this, I have told this, but that moment, there was no Richard Alpert, there was no Ram Dass. It was just completely being here for whatever I needed. In that first moment, you know, those eyes. And, you know, both of you have experienced the same thing with him. The last second I saw him, because I left Maui maybe 10 days to 2 weeks before he died. I said, okay, I got to go now. So he was lying back, but he got up on his, I mean, he was in a lot of pain then, but he got up on his elbow and just, you know, got right in my face. And that same thing of completely total non-judgmental acceptance and being here, and we're always here and there's nowhere to go, that whole thing, which you just kind of described already. Mm. That happened. No different from the first moment. So he was, I knew he was already there. How it manifested after he had that stroke because stuff was stripped away. Karma. I don't, you know, as Siddhi Ma, who's with Maharaji all these years and was our Indian mother, said to Ram Dass, this, when he thought that Maharaji gave him the stroke, and he's, Guru's not giving you any stroke. Your nature, the nature, karma, you know, and in fact, he let his body go. And that was a tough thing in terms of karma to have that stroke. But she said, what you were given is the grace of perspective of being able to transform this pain and suffering. And, you know, that's, we all can say a prayer for ourselves, for whatever that may be that's covering the ability to just let go and not be so divided within ourselves.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Beautiful
speech.
No, no, sorry for that. That was.
But wait a minute. We're talking about music, though. We
okay. Let's
music.
Talk about
what
it.
About
let's
music, Rachel? About you've been listening to Mike
forever.
I've been
into this, like, Dark Night of the Soul conversation. Let's
do it all.
I feel like it's so important to recognize that I'll go into music in a second, but like this idea of Dark Night of the Soul, and, you know, like St. John of the Cross talks about the Dark Night of the Soul that everyone goes through. And I couldn't help but thinking about Ram Dass during his stroke, like having that Dark Night of the Soul. For me, I feel like the last 2 years of my life have been like a crazy Dark Night of the Soul. But the thing about that is that, like, it's like a chrysalis. Like, you go into it thinking that you're dying, and you might spend like a lot of time in that dark night feeling like you're just totally dissolving. But what's really dying is the part of you that no longer serves you. And I'm really feeling that, like, a lot of people go through that. And I think right now, especially, we're in such a fucked up time that I think a lot of people are sort of rethinking the way that they walk through the world, their careers, their families, their relationships. So much is like falling away. And I just think that's such a theme right now of just like things are falling away, and we're all terrified of losing our identities and the things that we have. And we're just clinging on in fear, which I know I am. Like, I just hold on to these things and not recognizing that it's actually not beneficial to hold on to them anymore. I just, that came up for me when you're talking about the stroke, because you know, Ram Dass's ego and his identity totally like got ripped away.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep. Okay. When did you first hear Mike?
Okay. I'll redirect. I didn't know anything about your music until I started following you on Instagram when you were just starting your trip across the country. And I was like, who's Mike Posner? Someone like sent it to me or something. And so I became just really interested in you from just following that journey. And then I subsequently like looked up your music. And so yeah, that was whatever it was, like 2 years ago or 2019, I guess 3 years ago now. Yeah, I just thought it was following along, which was really interesting. I think a lot of people felt the same way. It's just a really like unique journey to follow. It's not something you see every day, you know? So
it's been really cool. You know, I talked a little bit how I got this like success when I was really young, and maybe more than I deserve. And I realized like my experience of life, you know, really didn't change at all. I didn't feel like worse, but I didn't feel better. And I thought there was a disillusionment that went along with that, Raku, where it was like, you know, I thought like, yeah, I was 18, 19. I thought, you know, I'm going to get this record deal and I'm going to be famous. And then I truly thought I would feel more secure, more comfortable in my own skin if I attained those things. And it just like revealed itself, like, to no one's surprise on this call or no one's surprise listening. Like, it revealed itself to be a moving target, right? It was like, I felt the same. And it was like, well, maybe I need another hit song, or maybe I need this or that. And the way I look at that now is, you know, the people that listen to my music basically gifted me all these material things. But the real gift was at a young age to understand those things like actually don't really change your moment to moment experience of life at all. And so then my life sort of became about, you know, in conjunction with like the Big Sean stories and all this stuff. And like, well, if that doesn't change the moment to moment experience of life, what does? And I feel like it's not enough for me to just go explore that on my own. That's like actually could maybe just be a little bit selfish. I like to go explore it on my own and then report back, you know, what I learned. So that's my intention, you know, with my music, and the way like any piece of art I create, you know, whether it's poetry or whether it's just like posting online, is to, you know, share the stuff I've learned along the way. And I've got to learn a lot of cool stuff and it's impacted me deeply. So yeah, I appreciate that. And thanks for sharing.
I think it's quite rare for someone, especially, you know, in the entertainment industry where like, I don't know, there's so much ego and typically, you know, so much ego and vanity involved in that whole world. I think it's really incredible for someone to actually recognize that like, oh, I'm like a hungry ghost. I'm like wandering around trying to find the next thing. Like, what's that next thing that's going to give me that hit of satisfaction for another couple of weeks and the next. And I think so many of, obviously not just people in the entertainment industry, but so many of us, I'd say most of us, walk around trying to figure out where's that next hit going to come from. And
no, 100%.
Okay, 100% of us, other than like, I don't know, maybe some like yogi up in the mountains in a cave.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama would be a good example.
But I just think that's incredible for you to actually recognize that like you and learn at a young age that like, oh yeah, this actually isn't the thing. Like so many people never learn that and struggle a lot in life. And I think suffer unnecessarily because they just think they're going to find the next thing, you know, with their new car, their new hit or whatever it is.
Yeah. You know, it's like been interesting. Also, we can talk about this if you want, but right after I finished my walk, I start on my next goal to climb Mount Everest. Oh,
yeah. We'd need another podcast for that.
That's fine. Jesus. We don't really have to go.
No, I want to know about it. Are you kidding?
It's like, I'm only mentioning that in context of a point I want to wrap around to.
Okay.
Like, so that was like another year and a half and like really freaking dangerous. And,
you think?
Yeah. Jeez. Really dangerous. And, with God's blessing, we were successful on June 1st. My team and I, we summited Mount Everest, and more importantly, we got back down with, you know, all our fingers and toes and nose, everything. And when I got back down, I thought, okay, I need to stop, right? Like I did the walk and I went right into the climb and I'm going to stop. So I went on retreat and there's a place I go to, it's like a Buddhist center, but they have little solo cabins set up for solo retreats. So they basically like drive you up a pickup truck, this mountain road, and there's a little cabin there with, you know, no electricity or nothing. And they just leave you there. They go, you know, they go, we try to forget about you until your time is done. You know? And so you're just there. And I have Be Here Now with me again, you know, and it's like, I read it again, you know, years later after reading it the first time. And of course, you come back to like the quote, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And some of the stuff in the cookbook at the end where I had felt like I sort of like maybe overcompensated where like I was so in like the material world. So I was like, I'm going to prove to myself I don't need any of this shit. Yeah, and I'm going to walk across America and I climb the tallest mountain and almost freaking die doing all this stuff. And yeah, I was rereading Be Here Now and it's like, no, you don't have to do that. You know, it's like you can go back to work on Monday, but be completely transformed, you know. And that really resonated with me in a deep way where, in essence, now I'm doing like the exact same thing I was doing before I left on my walk. You know, I go to the studio and make music and that's it pretty much. But it's all changed, You know, it's from a completely different place now. Not every day I screw up and I forget, but it feels way different, you know?
Yeah, that's it. It's only about perspective. It's just that your mind, you can sell a billion records or actually not sell any and have to face all of it. Your mind is going to be there no matter what.
That's right.
You carry, it's just there all the time. And embracing our humanness is the most difficult thing. Rachel put together this book, Words of Wisdom. I keep it by me, you know that, Rachel, now? Because you just open it up anywhere and you can get some, you know, sage advice from Ram Dass.
Read us one.
Well, there's one, and I've been doing it all the time because it's with me on a day-to-day, even through my own practice. He said, I myself stand in need of the arms of my own kindness. That's the one thing us in the West, we can't, well, most people can't, but in the West particularly, we consider ourselves to be pieces of shit that have to be judged on a moment-to-moment basis, right? So we have that so strongly, we can't even wrap ourselves in our own kindness. It's okay, we're human. It's all right.
It feels self-indulgent to like love yourself somehow. Like it feels like that's like you have to prove something by being stoic or by not acknowledging your own worth and your own value. Like you're egotistical if you love yourself or something. And that's just
there's a million reasons not to do it. You know, that's certainly one of the major ones. But self-compassion, and we're going to be doing more, actually, Rachel will be a big part of it, around presenting some material this fall, actually, around, you came up, I love the name, you came up, something around, kindness, all right? We're going to do a course that's around the different ways in which we can develop kindness. First, obviously, to ourselves through what Ram Dass represented, love, compassion, service, and mindfulness. That's, that's the whole game. We just went through an hour here. And I never have done anything with a musician and artist. I was in the music business. I don't even know. Did I? I must have told you that, maybe.
I don't remember.
No? Yeah. I had a label in Los Angeles for 20 odd years. Music means so much to me. But I never have talked to anyone without playing their music. I feel bad that we didn't play one of the songs. On the other hand, from our own Be Here Now Network legal department, they would go, you can't do that. Because who's your label?
Well, it depends on the song.
Any of the hit songs that we would play.
Yeah, the first one was with Sony, and my later one was at the Universal. And so, yeah, it gets all nasty.
Yeah, they'll get nasty with us. They'll close us down on YouTube right away. So everybody, instead of us having to get involved with that, and then we'd have to get Mike to call his manager.
Maybe I could sing something live now.
Okay, please.
Yeah, Ood Singh Hom.
Yeah, I could do that.
That's a request. You don't have to, but I love that new song.
Thank you. Well, I need to do a little minor.
No, so go ahead, because that's not a problem. This is a podcast, not a...
This isn't Good Morning America.
It's not Good Morning America.
I love that. Let me grab my guitar.
Okay. That's great. What a great idea.
Yeah, have you heard this new song?
I don't think so. What is it called?
I'm gonna like it. It's called Home. It just came out.
Home. Yeah. Is that?
I'm Mike's publicist.
Yeah. Is that Mike's first single off a new album, or do you know enough?
Sure.
Eh?
He can answer that. I don't know.
Okay, you don't know. April 22nd, Mike will be on the Soul Land Music Series at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Mm-hmm. Both with a wonderful performance, as well as there'll be a Q&A. And Mike is also one of two artists, and the other artist is Rachel. Since we're
Mariah Woods is a fantastic kind of dark folk musician who lives in Poland, and she is wonderful. She's from Denver, or from Colorado, not Denver. Sorry, she's from Colorado. So she'll be the accompanying artist with Mike on Friday.
So it's a great evening of music, and it's available post the appointed time, live time at 5 o'clock. Pacific, and you'll be able to just tune in to where? All of the usual places, Facebook, YouTube.
Ramdas.org.
Go to Ramdas. The best is Ramdas.org. I think we have the best sound. Is that true? Probably a little bit more bitrate. But meanwhile, Mike Posner is with us for our first ever live performance.
Okay, I got a tune
on Mind Rolling. So, Mike, is this song a single off a new album, or how are you doing it?
This song is just a song I wrote that's not out, that just feels right to play in this moment.
Okay, great.
And it's called Something Good.
Nice.
This will all be better soon. The sun will turn into the moon. Then the moon will disappear. The sun will dry up all your tears. Hold your head up, don't you cry. Daddy's here right by your side. The mood is like a summer breeze. First it's here and then it leaves. But it always turns to something good. Something right. Mother's touch is soft as cake. Everybody makes mistakes. And everything comes with a cost. Don't think other people's thoughts. Hold your head up, don't you cry. Goodness gracious, you're alive. Life is like a summer breeze. First it's here and then it leaves. But it always turns to something good. Something right. Something.
Beautiful.
What song to play again.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thanks so much, Mike.
This was such a pleasure, such an honor. You know, just you guys and all your work over there has given me so much. And I'm I'm grateful I get to tell you thank you, right? Because there's a lot of other people just listening and hearing the stuff that it's touching. You know, I was one of them, and now I get to tell you thanks. So thank you both for all the work you're doing. It's been just a huge, huge, like, co-pilot for me in my journey. Appreciate you.
Thank you. It's always great to hear for us to get feedback like that. It's,
oh, come on. Come on.
It's wonderful. It everything that we've been talking about, all the music of Mike's will be able, you'll be able to connect with it on when you go to BeHereNow.com/mindrolling and take a look at the show notes, and underneath there'll be links and all of that. And also the big thing is this wonderful show on the 22nd of April that Mike is doing for Soulland Music. And it'll be available after that, as we've said before. And again, I really thank you for joining us in the series and joining on this podcast, Mike. It's
thank you, Raku.
Thanks so much. And Rachel, thanks for being here too.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Nice to chat with you, Mike. Yes. And I'll see you on Friday. I'll be hosting you. So
all right. You're going to be together. So there you go. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com and catch all the wonderful teachers and podcasts. See you next week.
Bye.